Good Hour returns. After a lengthy layoff, Ben Ennis is here. What's up, buddy?
Yo. Yeah, I went away.
Just laughing.
Gone. So I was banned from the show or something? I don't know. What did I do? What did I do to be banned from the show?
No, you weren't banned from the show. It was just Leafs playoff run, and we were getting tons of hockey people. And you were doing your own thing. You had your own show. That's all that.
Yeah.
You get banned.
Yeah. No, you just say goodbye, and then on a whim, you're like, oh, can you do, you know, 4 weeks later? Look at me. I guess I said yes.
Pretty much. Yeah, exactly. You came crawling back. Okay. We're going to talk about Blue Jays. You and I were both at the game yesterday, and we're also going to talk about re-upping Kyle Dubas and how it makes us feel. But are you aware that another Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher hit a bird yesterday with a pitch?
I haven't seen the video because I'm just getting caught up. Like, yeah, because we were at the game last night. I just see the headline, and I can't wait to see the video.
Okay, so
Zach Gallen. Right?
I'm on record saying that the most incredible thing we'll ever see in sports and that we would never see again is a pitcher hitting a bird and killing it with a pitch in a baseball game. And now, granted, this wasn't in a game, okay? So the thing still stands. The bird didn't cross home plate. Zach Gallen, one of the, two best pitchers on the Arizona Diamondbacks, the best pitcher on the Arizona, him and Merrill Kelly, right? They're the two guys. He is warming up, and he throws a curveball to his long toss partner, and it hits a bird and obviously destroys the bird because his curveball is 84 miles per hour and it picks the bird off. And it's hilarious watching the video, actually, because the broadcaster has to balance the incredible uniqueness, the throwback to Randy Johnson, all while not going too crazy about it to make sure that the bird people don't freak out that he's too happy that a bird died. It's such a good video. And then,
I'm looking at
right now. Yeah, watch the video. It's and the guy, his long toss partner is just blown away. Like, it's the exact same thing. Feathers everywhere, just like Randy Johnson. It hits the bird, and it turns into basically an evaporated bird. Do you think we're living in a simulation? Because I now – the Spurs won the draft lottery. I'm wondering if just everything's kind of on a loop, and we're doing this thing with now different people. Like, the Spurs have a 7-foot center who's a once in a generation prospect who's not from this country, or not from the United States, just like Tim Duncan. And now we've got this going on where guys are hitting birds with baseballs, and it has to be an Arizona Diamondbacks player. Like, come on.
I won't discount the possibility that we're living in a simulation and that, the whole planet, the universe is scripted and, like, the script writers, like, ran out of ideas. Like, they're like, oh, this happened long enough ago, people won't remember. And, like, we want to take an extended vacation, so they're rerunning some old scripts. I will also say, though, how many baseballs have been thrown without hitting a bird between Randy Johnson and Zach Gallen? Quite a few, right? And like, and I guess it was just a matter of time, right?
Yeah,
like,
birds are pretty good at getting out of the way of things, is what I
realized. If they can see it coming, but like, you can't see that coming. You can't see, like, they don't know that a catch session is happening.
Every time they throw a baseball, it's not like there's a bunch of birds that are hovering around the plate and then they scatter every time there's a pitch. No, this is incredibly unique, obviously, and this is incredibly rare. I can't believe that it happened again, but I'm just blown away that it's an Arizona Diamondbacks player. Like, was it in Arizona? Were both the birds hit in Arizona? Is this
This is in Oakland. And that's the, you know what? That's the shame of it, that there was, well, it was, I guess, before they let anyone in. Actually, I can't tell. So the video, there's nobody in the seats. Is like, were the gates open and just nobody was at an Oakland A's game because nobody's ever at an Oakland A's game, and understandably so because they're going to move to Las Vegas, or was this before people were allowed?
Dude, it's so sad that Oakland just lost all their teams. Just they took all their teams away. I'm still sad to this day about losing the Sonics, and I didn't even live there. I can't imagine living in Oakland, losing the Raiders, losing the A's, and losing the Golden State Warriors. It is just, why doesn't that get talked about more?
Well, I don't. Okay, I've been to an Oakland A's game at that horrible ballpark. I've also been to San Francisco. I mean, so, like, if you're a Warriors fan, what, you can't drive, like...
No, a Warriors fan, you can traverse, but still, it was your thing. It was in your city. It is different. It's not far enough that you're going, okay, you can... That one you can haggle over a little bit, right? That one is kind of fine. But you outright lost the other two teams to Vegas. And Vegas is kind of close enough where...
Well,
No, it is.
But we're talking about Northern California. That is a long drive. But from the Bay Area to Las Vegas, Nevada has got to be like 10 hours.
It's a trek, but it's not far enough that you're not like outside of the geographical sphere of it. They're still going to play games there, right? They're still going to – and by that I mean on television. And I guess you can get games now no matter what. It doesn't matter where you live. But I just don't think that those fans – are going to not all necessarily abandon the teams. And it's hard to go to a rival, right? If you're – like, if you're an Oakland Raiders fan, your choice is cheer for the team that got stolen from you or go cheer for your hated, most hated interstate rivals. Like, it's such a horrible position to be in. Maybe it's just because we're in Canada and nobody cares, but I've been thinking about those Oakland fans all year long because they've got one of the best broadcasters in all of baseball, right, with Dallas Braden. Mm-hmm. And he always he's always Mr. Positive, and he's so enthusiastic about baseball. And sometimes I'll just flip on an Oakland game late at night when I just, you know, the games are over and it's one of the only things remaining. And there's Dallas Braden with his relentless positivity watching an Oakland A's game with nobody in the stadium where they're getting pounded by 14 runs. And you're just like, God, this is dark. This is as bleak as it gets. They're literally Cleveland from the major leagues. That's 100% what they are. They stripped down the team, and they're a joke. It's bad.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
And Moneyball is kind of an embarrassment in retrospect as well, because they don't talk about like the three-headed starting pitching monster that was basically the entire engine of those good Oakland A's teams, who, by the way, also won nothing, playing in a horrible division. That's why they were able to make the playoffs and then kept getting pounded when they got into the postseason. So, yeah, it's a tough run of a couple of years for old Oakland A's.
Yeah, poor Oakland A's. And you know what else doesn't live up well? Is Marshawn Lynch at that City Hall meeting where he just showed up and said, y'all lost the Warriors, y'all lost the Raiders, best not lose the A's. And those politicians
were like...
He's a harbinger.
You don't want Marshawn Lynch to show up to defend your franchise. Like, he might be showing up in Arizona to like keep the Coyotes maybe, and that would be the first indication that, that team's on the move.
Okay, we really do need to get to the baseball stuff, like the Blue Jays stuff and the local sports team, but there's two quick things. One is Josiah Bosch, Jobo, as he's better known on the show, our researcher, he found out immediately that Gallen hit the bird around 3:30, which I don't know how he found that out, but good for you, Jobo. That's really good research. So the gates weren't open to the game. And that it's an 8.5-hour drive from Vegas to Oakland. So, that's a real haul. That's a lengthy haul.
Yeah, but that's like Toronto to like almost New York City, right? Like I was looking at Pittsburgh is less than 5 hours. Cleveland is doable, but you're not driving and then driving back to New York City. You're making like a weekend of it.
No. And last thing before Blue Jays, did you see? So the Arizona thing happens, and they go, they're not going to have an arena here. And then I go, oh, that's nice. They're going to move, finally, because this has been so unsuccessful. All they can point to is Austin Matthews being a hockey player and go, he wouldn't have been one without the Arizona Coyotes. And we go, all right, I guess, like, maybe that's true. Maybe not. Mostly you guys have been there now for years and years and years, and you just still have zero product that has been captured by the market. And that's why I find this kind of Florida thing to be tough about them being in Stanley Cup Finals. And Dallas, same kind of thing. But then I woke up yesterday, and I was like looking at these news stories, and they're like, well, they are still going to play there next year, and the NHL's really hoping. And I go, are you kidding me? This story will never die. If we live to be 100 years old, we're going to be waking up to stories about people in Arizona telling the NHL they don't want hockey there, and the NHL going, we're keeping hockey here, okay? You can't
get rid of us. It's Clockwork Orange where, like, their eyes are stapled open, forced to watch. Yeah, National Hockey League hockey. Yeah, in their state. No, it won't die. It and you know what? It could die, right? Like I know it feels late in the proceedings, but like the Atlanta Thrashers moved to Winnipeg before June, right? Like when that fell apart in Atlanta, like you could do it. Oh. You could absolutely move the Coyotes into a real NHL facility with 20,000 seat capacity, you could do it. But there's a thing called being pot committed. Yeah. And then there's whatever the NHL has done over the last 20 years with that franchise. Like, they have invested so much time, so much effort, and so much, like, so much equity as far as credibility when it comes to Gary Bettman, because we said this isn't going to work. And he's like, watch. You watch me. Yeah. You watch me. You watch this thing work. I know right now it looks silly playing in a five. And even the 5,000-seat arena, that's going to be kind of cool. People are going to be into it. It's going to be a college atmosphere. You see, we're going to build a brand new stadium in Tempe. It's going to be the jewel of the National Hockey League. They're so far down the line, and there are so many, like, sound bites of him committing over the last 20 years that, like, yeah, his foundational core of credibility is almost gone if they ever leave that state. They can't.
Dude, no. I don't know what they do. I also love that Matthews was technically born in California, and now my brain is so conspiratorial that I'm like, when he was starting to come up, he probably just, like, vacationed in Arizona once, and Gary Bettman went to the family and was like, listen, I'll give you whatever you want. Where does he want to go? We'll rig the lottery to make sure he lands in Toronto. It's a great city.
We had
just
Shane
say
Donan.
He's from Arizona.
We had Shane Donan during the Leafs playoff run. Remember that? I was like, yeah, Matthew Nyes is the real Arizona guy. Like, he should be the real face of Arizona hockey, born and raised in Arizona, not like this interloper. Austin Matthews.
That joke went over well?
He gave me a courtesy chuckle. He was like...
Okay, so we went to the Jays game yesterday, you, my brother, and I. And boy, what a ball game. First of all, why is it that we can't have the dome open when it's cold outside, but the weather is not stopping the baseball game? Like, I don't understand why people in Toronto can't have the responsibility put on them to wear a jacket.
I swear that this was a conversation in the city that we were going to transition to having an open-air ballpark that could close. Because I know it's no longer a multi-use facility, right? Like, it's a baseball. That's it. There's no more monster truck rallies. I don't even think there's concerts there. Like, are
there's
there concerts
no more monster truck rallies at Rogers Center?
The first monster truck rally I'd ever attended. I saw a Truckosaurus at Sky Dome. Yeah. How dare you, sir? I don't think they.
No,
do
I'm
that
saying
anymore.
I can't believe that tradition is done because I'm surprised. I didn't know this. This is news to me that the Rogers Center is purely a baseball stadium now.
Yeah. It's built in a way that it's not like it used to be that you could actually physically take down the outfield walls, right? Like, you could reconfigure it for certain things. No, it's baseball ballpark, except that it's not, right? Like, except that, everybody needs to be comfy cozy, and if it dips below 15 degrees in the cool air of the evening, gotta button that thing up, which, by the way, it's not comfortable. We're in
there. No, it's not.
It's stuffy, and it's hot, and that was not at max capacity, understandably, for a midweek game in May, but no, it's really, and the thing that was making yesterday so cold was mostly the wind. When you open the roof and you got the big walls there, you're not feeling the wind too much. I was not shocked, but, like, kind of embarrassed that we're not opening the dome when it's over 10 degrees.
I even get it when the weather is not great and there's a chance of rain and they just go, yeah, we're going to err on the side of caution. I can live with that.
Deal.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. When it's that, but you know how there are those times where it doesn't rain and they're going, oh, it's still not raining, open up the roof or open it up. That I can understand. Yeah. The cold weather thing is weird to me at this point. And yeah, the stadium is so much nicer when the dome is open. I've never heard of a person that has gone to a Blue Jays game when it's been cold and gone, oh, good, the dome is closed. Now I don't have to bring a jacket. Now I don't have to bring a slightly heavier coat to the baseball game.
I would like to know, like, what is the rooftop patio attendance like when the roof is open and you're just looking at, you know, metal I-beams in front of you instead of the beautiful city's skyline?
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't been up that high yet. Have you? I've only gone up to the 200s. The highest new part of the ballpark I've gone to is the Snyder's porch.
Are you scared?
Yeah, I am. It's a lot. I'm scared of finding out how out of shape I am by climbing that high up.
Because I am, like, I've been up there, And I've flown airplanes before, but there's something different about being on like a railing that high, which it's over my waist, but it's like, I don't know. There is something about, it's something being lower than my shoulders and leaning out over it, 100 feet up in the air. I wouldn't say I'm scared of it. I would say that I would not lean on the front railing.
This hadn't even crossed my mind because I hadn't been up there for it, but I think I would be scared. I think I would be scared of that. What you just said made me anxious as you were outlining it. So yeah, I would like to say that I could have gotten away with this my whole life without saying I was scared of it, because I never would have gone up to the 500s.
You wouldn't have walked through that door if I hadn't been the first guy to open it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So now at least I'm going to be even more staunch in my position to never go up there, to just be down in the 100s, the flight deck and the Schneider's porch. Those are the spots for me. Okay, so here's the question of the day, and I was kind of tiptoeing around it with Ben Nicholson-Smith yesterday, because I brought up a bunch of different things about the Blue Jays that have been underwhelming to me so far this season, and some far worse than others, right? Like, what's going on with Alek Manoah right now is not comparable with me being a little frustrated with Dalton Varsho's bat that will probably normalize at some point this season, right? Like, even if you don't think he's going to be a great offensive player, clearly the Manoah thing is a huge problem for the Blue Jays, whereas that is not so much right now. But I think the way I can put this or pose a question to you is, I think the Blue Jays are a good team. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure they have the ability to be a great team. What do you think?
I think they have the top-end talent to compete with any... back to the Manoah thing. The reason you believe they could win a World Series was because they have MVP candidates at the top of the order, good enough depth to get it back around to them, and Kevin Kiermaier's part of that. And then a top two rotation.
Kevin Kiermaier's not depth anymore, okay? He's one of the team's most important players. Like, we got to stop pretending this whole thing like, well, Kevin Kiermaier is a bench guy that's so great for them. He's their starting center fielder.
I don't expect him to continue to do exactly what he's doing, which is like 850 OPS. Like, I expect him to be a league average hitter, which he's been in his whole career. And I know, like, he's comfortable in the nine hole, but at a certain point, you do need to start thinking about getting him a few more plate appearances, like him hitting maybe seventh. Honestly, like, how many times would you prefer Kevin Kiermaier to Dalton Varsho? You're not going to hit Kevin Kiermaier fourth, because that's like you're waving the white flag. Like, that is terrifying. But yeah, lineup construction's not all that important unless you're talking about how many plate appearances it gets you over the course of a regular season. I'd like to see more Kevin Kiermaier. Anyways, to your point,
to close that thought though, I kind of like it when you have a good hitter with speed at the bottom of your order, so that when it turns over, it feels like you have another
guy
there.
You don't want him to steal bases to make outs on the base paths ahead of your big bats, right? But yeah, generally, I agree with that. To your point about, is this a great team? I think still the ceiling is obviously very high. Like, we've seen Kevin Gausman have some blips, but he can look like one of the best pitchers in baseball. That top four in this lineup, like if George Springer reverts to being George Springer, can compete with anybody in baseball. I think the catchers are going to be better. I think so much of whether they can be great, honestly, hinges on the thing that you started this with, is Alek Manoah. Like, if Alek Manoah is meh or worse, and like he's off to a worse start than Yusei Kikuchi was in his first nine starts last season, like just across the board. Like,
that's
Yusei
shocking.
Kikuchi was getting deeper into ball games more regularly than Alek Manoah has through nine starts. Alek Manoah has more walks through nine starts than Yusei Kikuchi did last season. It's been that bad for that dude. So, just getting him away from Yusei Kikuchi's zone would be nice, but like the idea of him not being an ace Cy Young award contending pitcher is a massive blow to this team. Like, unless you think Chris Bassett is that, because he's kind of also been like ace two on the staff, save from the first start and then the first inning of his second start, he's been as good as advertised and has the fourth longest shutout streak in the history of the ball club. But no, that's what's keeping this team from being great, is having two elite starting pitchers where like two out of every 5 days, you probably need 3-4 runs to win a baseball game.
So I think it extends a lot deeper than that, and that's why I'm worried. Is that to me right now, when it comes to talking about them about being potentially great, there are too many ifs. It's not like one thing that is going to be holding them back from that, in my opinion, from watching them so far this season. The Manoah thing is the clear and obvious. They can have a great rotation and be built on their rotation, and that can be the special thing about this baseball team if he's able to normalize. And weirdly, despite how horrific he's looked and pitched, and yeah, the fact that no one seems to know exactly what's going on, whether it's mechanical, whether it's in his head, whether it's the pitch clock, you know, it's pretty troubling at this point, and it's pretty hard to figure this stuff out as you're trying to pitch against the best hitters on the planet. Like, it's not an easy job to do. But to me, what you said there is, even in your answer, you went, if Springer normalizes. And I'm going, okay, are we sure that the 33-year-old guy that has not stayed healthy over his career is going to be the superstar bat that we thought we were going to have basically here for a couple more years?
But you think he's going to be like a 610 OPS guy?
No, I don't think he's going to be a 610 OPS guy. Certainly not. But I look at those top four dudes that you mentioned, and I don't agree with your assessment that they're going to be like the most special core or one of the three most special 1-2, 1-4s in all of baseball. I think they're good. That's what I'm saying. I think the Blue Jays are good. I think that is a good 1-4. After that, I go, all right, what is Varsho? Is Kiermaier going to stay this hot? Is Chapman going to stay that hot? We've already seen Chapman kind of cool down. I think that the catchers are going to play better. We've had Dan Jansen have 2 walk-offs in the last week, which has been nice. But I don't know if we're going to expect Alejandro Kirk to essentially be... What did we think he was last year at some point?
Well, he was a guy who was an over 800 OPS guy, and then tail end of the season, he tailed off quite a bit, but was an above average hitter, and then the defensive stuff was actually leaned in his favor a season ago. It's a little bit different this year, although he's caught a few more base dealers in recent weeks than he did to start the season.
I can summarize this way. I should have just done it this way. The pitching staff can be great, and I think it's already borderline that, given the way that Kikuchi has bounced back this season. But if Manoah can pitch well and he can find himself again, then yeah, having those three guys at the top of your order with the potential of Kikuchi and Barrios, I think that your rotation is great. That is a great rotation. I don't see the path to that for the bats. I think that they're above average. I think they're good. And then I think that the bullpen is just average. That's where I'm at with this team.
I think the bullpen needs work. I think they have a great closer, honestly.
They do. They definitely have a great closer. That's the most important part. So good for them.
Yeah.
They got the best guy.
I got a lot of time for Eric Swanson, despite the fact that, he was the guy that cost them the game. I would say scoring 3 runs against the bullpen in a bullpen game for the Blue Jays cost them that game. But no, by and large, Eric Swanson's been great. And then Tim Mayza, honestly, has been pretty great as well, like, say, for game one of the season. Outside of that, like, the circle of trust is very small with the Blue Jays bullpen. So I'm with you on the bullpen needing some work. I look at there's you can't just, like, gloss over the catchers reverting to form, right? Like, that's a huge part of this team reaching its offensive ceiling is they're supposed to be built on the best offensive catching tandem in Major League Baseball. They've been one of the worst. I think they're 20th in WRC plus amongst their catchers in baseball. This is the best hitting catcher team in all of baseball this season. This is also a team that hasn't hit home runs. Like, they're 17th in baseball in home runs, and they weren't the best home run hitting team a season ago. They were pretty good, though. They were top 10. They were 7th in baseball in homers a season ago. And I don't know if that's a ballpark thing. Of course, like, we don't have a large enough sample size to discern what is happening with the new dimensions at Rogers Center. But, like, the idea that this was going to be some bandbox and everything was going to be a home run at Rogers Center, I think, was always incorrect. And could be playing into the lack of power across the lineup, but I think there's enough upside with the catchers. I think there's enough upside with Springer that they can be good enough. Like, last season, who had a spectacular offensive season for this team, and they were still one of the best offenses in all of baseball? Can they go back to being that?
But I think, okay, I know this is a really unfair way of putting this, but 2015, obviously the bats were great. It was just a great, great offense. The question here is, are they good or are they great? I agree with you. The offense is good. There's some things that are going to normalize. To me, though, it's just going, do we really think that Brandon Belt at some point this year, we're going to be not singing his walk-up song, Say It Ain't So, and going that it's him?
On base.
Like, you know? Yeah. It just... Yeah, he got on base a bunch, but that's the thing, no power again still. Yeah. And you're right about the bandbox thing. I think everyone expected that, especially the lefties, were just going to be crushing baseballs out of the ballpark, and that has not happened. I don't know how many Varsho has at the Rogers Center. Vladdy still hasn't hit a home run at the Rogers Center, which is tough. And yeah, Brandon Belt, same kind of thing. But I do think that'll change a little bit in the summer when it starts to heat up, gets hot. And over the course of the season, I think Rogers Center will be a little bit more of a bandbox. I don't really see the path forward where the offense is special unless those, like Alejandro Kirk turns into an all-star again. Danny Jansen turns into the guy that he's been, which I think is more realistic, and he's starting to show signs of that. That you get Brandon Belt turning into a real DH that OPS is around 800 and he finds his power again. And Varsho finds himself kind of in that range. And that just seems like a lot of ifs for me.
Did you think it was a great offense last season?
I thought it was a, very good offense last season. Very good borderline.
They had no outstanding offensive seasons, right? Like
they didn't.
The way that offense was built was a bunch of guys that were above average, right? Like no glaring holes in the lineup. That's the bar. This is not a, hey, Aaron Judge in the middle of the lineup hitting 60 home runs and everybody just, you know, have a game every once in a while to keep us afloat. That's our linchpin to the offense. I think they're capable of doing that. Like, I don't see any obvious black holes in this lineup.
Well, I do whenever they have to go to a non-regular everyday player.
Buddy, you want to talk about the biggest reason to be pessimistic about this team? Is they've been the healthiest team in Major League Baseball. They've had the fewest man games lost due to injury in Major League Baseball. And this has been the most injured season to, like, the first 2 months of the season. There have been more injuries than ever before in the first 2 months of a Major League Baseball season. Blue Jays have suffered none of them. And if you expect them to go in an entire 6 month stretch without some rash of injuries that really hobble this team, you're wrong. And even as fully healthy and completely intact, there are glaring weaknesses at the bottom of the active roster. Like, imagine dipping into AAA right now and Drew Hutchison is making a start. Thomas Hatch is on the team. Like, he's there in the bullpen right now.
Lucas. I liked him in the bullpen. Is he back? Is Hatch back? Yeah, is the Hatch back?
I mean... If Hatch is in a baseball game, it's a bad scenario.
Good. Yeah.
I don't think anybody's...
Or really good. Really good.
Yeah, I mean, in 2020, he was kind of like the best part of that Blue Jays bullpen outside of Jordan Romano. But I don't have high expectations for Thomas Hatch. I'd like to see Nathan Lucas get the next start that Kevin Biggio was supposed to start in a corner outfield spot. I don't know what Kevin Biggio needs to do to lose his stranglehold on that, like, once a week starting job that Nathan Lucas can't take it from him. But that's what we're talking about.
Telling, though, that the depth of this team, that's the signifier is, you know, war, there's wins above replacement. It's like the Jays have wins above Kevin Biggio, and there's no one that can do that. There's not a single wins above Kevin Biggio guy in the organization. I don't know what we need to see from Lucas or however you're supposed to. He's played so few games that I still don't know if it's Lukes or Lucas. I keep getting confused. Your guy, Addison Barger, I don't really think is a thing.
No, everybody's off to a horrible start, and he's hurt now. But that's the thing. Like, even Otto Lopez... he's been worse than awful. He's like got an OPS of like 450 or something. No, everybody's bad. And then the good guy, he's also hurt. Ricky Tiedemann, who I think, I get, like, I'm of two minds with the Ricky Tiedemann thing too. Like, one is that he's, you know, his development's been slowed down. That maybe you don't expect him in the major leagues. The other is, this is what happens when you throw 100 miles an hour. Let's get him up to the major leagues as soon as possible.
I don't think it's so much that he throws 100 miles per hour. From the way it's been explained to me over and over again by all the top prospect guys that I've had on the pod, it's about the way he throws the baseball, not how hard he throws it.
With his arm.
And just, yeah. His arm slot is the thing that they really worry about. They compared it to Patrick Corbin. I've heard it compared to Patrick Corbin. But anyway, all right. I think that's enough. I'm not trying to be negative about the Blue Jays. I think they're a really good team. And maybe this is my Leaf stuff bleeding into the way that I'm viewing the Jays. Just to me, I guess I've been thinking a lot about, you know, windows and timelines and when you capitalize on great players. And I think that we both agree that Vladdy and Bo were the two crown jewels of this organization, and a lot of this was predicated around building the right team around them. And I wonder if we've seen the best versions of the Jays already pass, and whether they're going to be able to build a great team around them. And, like, yeah, some of the things they've just missed. And you even look at next offseason in terms of some of the decisions they're going to have to make. It's tough. The timeline here for those guys is shifting. Anyways, let's talk about those timelines. And, yeah, the Leafs. Bringing back Dubas, everyone now seems to be consensus. It makes sense. And I don't know how to feel about that. Quick break. We'll return with Good Hour.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, Good Hour continues. Subscribe to this podcast, share it. Always love when people reach out. And speaking of reaching out, you, Benny, rode my best bet yesterday, the under. And then we live bet one of the great hits both had on Betano yesterday.
Holy cow.
We live bet the over at 2.5 at a plus number. Because it was getting late in the ballgame.
Yeah.
It was scoreless, and we thought...
Well, it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we had the profits from my under first five innings, 4.5, which was basically the most effortless win that you can ever have. Again, a complete no sweater. I need to get one that's a little sweatier, and so my pick today is going to involve that. Because you're aware of how many of these I've been just winning, right? Like, it should be national news. You should be talking about it on your show. See, this is rude. This is what I'm saying.
It eluded me.
This should be the biggest story at the company. I haven't lost this week. I only lost once last week. Same with the week before that. So, yeah, I think, there's over the last 3 weeks of shows, we have two misses.
Well, at a certain point, is there not like a little voice in the back of your head that's like, wait, why aren't I taking my talents to Las Vegas like full time? Like, why aren't why isn't that just my job?
Buddy, this is what's hilarious is, you know, we promote Betano Sportsbook, and they must be thrilled with the coverage and that so many people, man, it really is a phenomenal book. I know you're using it now, too. And but they've got to be going, you're killing us here, kid. Can you miss once? And I go, no, because I'm for the people. And they know that. They knew this when they got in bed with me. And that's the thing is I'll always be for the people. I will always provide the winners, winners, winners. Anyways, reach out anytime. Okay, so Dubas. It just kind of ended that like the season ends and all of a sudden it becomes very clear that Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner basically hold all the keys to the kingdom with the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're in full control a month from now. They get no move clauses that kick in and both guys want to be here. Both guys want a lot of money. Both guys like playing with each other. And so the search for a new general manager is not one that can take time. It's one that has to be expedited so that they can answer some of these questions pretty quickly. And Kyle Dubas, I think, is a good GM, and most of us agree that he is. He's somebody who has made huge mistakes, but he's gotten better over his course as general manager. But it keeps feeling so weird to me that the Leafs might re-up this guy after the do-or-die season ended in another embarrassment, and that he's the guy who helped build this culture, and that really the only questions we seem to be having are how much of a raise does he get when it comes to power and money. I can't tell if this is just me being someone who wants a pound of flesh versus my rational brain, and those two things seem to be at real odds with one another when I'm trying to have the conversation about what the hell should happen with Dubas here. But yeah, I don't know. It just, this is a very, very odd thing to me, where a guy had another failure and has had five seasons with one playoff round win. And by the way, five seasons of embarrassing exits, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he's being rewarded. I don't know why I feel this way.
Okay.
I'm trying to flesh this out.
Okay, I'm going to help you. But I need more information about how you feel.
Okay.
Because, like, are you saying that he shouldn't return, right? Because All along, during the course of the season, as the lame duck GM, and this was always a possibility, or going out in the first round was always a possibility. I thought the process was sound. I thought he did an incredible job at the deadline. I thought he did as well as he could have done, and I would have
blew another goaltender though.
I was fine extending him either way at that point. So like my mind hasn't changed, right? Like so has your like where are you? Do you want a pound of flesh? Do you think he's done a bad job? Like, do you want him gone?
Okay, so here's where I'm at with it. It's this. You got to follow me down like a psycho's trail here. Okay, had they just extended him, I wouldn't have been calling for his job. Like, I wouldn't have been. I would have said, it's fine. He's a good general manager, and let him see it through another year. Right? If he only had one or two more years left on the deal, I think what I've come to realize is, I don't ever want to see a lame duck GM again in my lifetime. That this strategy is so stupid. Like, that
you hit it. You hit it. You absolutely hit on it. And I mean, depending, like, Nick Kiprios had the report that they were like trying to extend him during the season, and then he gave him a Heisman, expecting this potential of being in demand and his price tag going up, and like maybe was insulted by the offer that he received during the course of the season. That was,
I don't think he's,
you're
100%
right though. That was that was the swing and a miss. Whoever's making that decision, who thought that it was like, hey, we're playing hardball, you're not getting a contract extension, we want results, dang it. And like they got all the puck luck in a 6-game series win, and they get the series victory that still counts. It was
once every
not
20
a dominating
years our local
game.
Hockey team will win a playoff round. Okay, so nobody tells us we can't have that in our. No, I get what you're saying,
that was the bar for this group. Like, what was the bar? What was the bar for this group to say no, thank you?
Okay, so that's my thing. Even if they were trying to extend him like that and he played the leverage game, I feel like both sides ended up in a stupid spot because they didn't get this done last offseason, that they should have just gone in and at least handed him, like, do essentially the franchise tag with this guy, where you go, hey, we're going to give you what, hey, maybe we fire you and maybe you have a job to stay, but you get an extra year of pay. Like, what's wrong with that, having at least a 1 or 2 year extension? And that's where I'm at with this. Giving him some type of a mega deal right now where he gets more power and more money at a point where, what? So if the Leafs fail spectacularly under Dubas next year, you're just fine with him being the general manager again? Like, what happens if Dubas doesn't make a move of consequence? And so, also, why would he have to if he's the general manager who has more power? Why would they go, okay, so you want more money? Okay, we'll give that to you. Okay, you want more power? We'll give that to you. All right, you definitely have to fire your coach, though. You definitely have to trade Mitch Marner. Like, none of that's going to work. He's not going to – the whole play is he wants to have more autonomy.
Yeah, and what you just described is like the nightmare scenario in pro sports where ownership starts dictating terms, right? It's like, here's what has to happen.
Of course.
Like, we all think that one of the core four pieces should be traded, and I think that's a reasonable thing for Kyle Dubas, a reasonable conclusion for him to come to at this point. But the idea that, hey, yeah, you can come back, we'll sign you to a 10-year contract extension to be the general manager, you got to fire your coach, you got to trade Mitch Marner. Like, that's worse than a brand new GM who has to decide the biggest decisions in the history of the franchise in a matter of like 2 months.
You know, it's just such a it's hilarious to me that somehow they keep finding a bottom, right? Like, they win the playoff round and then they get embarrassed. They don't win. They win one game at home over the course of the two rounds. They get completely just no-show performances in a round against Florida. But then the season ends and you go, all right, this should be interesting. The Leafs are going to make a lot of moves, and who's going to be the new GM? And then they go, actually, they really kind of have to give it to Dubas, or else it's going to be a complete zoo. And the players have all the – they have even – you know those players that you thought had the most power? They actually have even more power. They've got these clauses that no one has been talking about for years that kick in now. They actually kick in today, like right now, this very minute. And if this isn't figured out, you're basically hooped and you're back to the exact same thing as you saw last year. And I keep coming back to – okay, and I know, whatever, this is not the priority of the concern, but I keep thinking about the fans having to watch the Leafs next year with everyone back. Like, Marner, Matthews, Nylander, Dubas, Keith, and I can't get over, or just even a new head coach, like that really is going to be the big differentiator in all of this?
I did take a couple of things away from the Dubas presser, right? Like he did, I know he didn't say it explicitly, but it was a different tone with him, like talking about the path and like, hey, like there's a thing about being loyal and then there's a thing about, being immovable. I'm also, like, call me a sucker if you want. And an old softy, but I truly buy the family thing, like that was
a
part of it. And that, like, because if it was a leverage thing, why wouldn't you leave all your options open? Why wouldn't you be talking to the Penguins? Why wouldn't you be investigating the Senators? Like, why wouldn't you open that Pandora's box?
First of all, you are such a sucker. For anyone to feel sympathy for a guy who was handed one of the coolest jobs in North America in his early 30s because it was taxing because he wants to win and it was hard for his young family, you got to give your head a shake. Two is that, of course, it was a negotiation tactic. And you know why it happened? Is because I'm not sure there are all these other jobs out there for him. This was always the thing I was talking about, that there's not a bunch of jobs. This is not... I'll just go to the job fair if I get a job off the job tree. Like, he's not that in demand, and there aren't that many openings. And so Pittsburgh was always there. And I think it's kind of being, whispered anyways, that Pittsburgh wasn't there for him anymore, that they weren't going to give him everything he wanted. And so, the play was what most of us have to do in our jobs when we're not wanted somewhere else, which is go, I'll just quit then. And that's his only move. That's what he played. And so good for him. He played that card. But anyway, the tone thing, too, I disagree with, because that's what every general manager says. And as they should, they always say everything's on the table, writes the same deal. Okay, whatever. It's a slight adjustment to the same words, bro.
No, to me, I heard something totally different. That it wasn't, hey, I'm going to trade one of these losers. It was like something of along the lines of, hey, I'd be open to trading one of these losers. Like that's kind of what I heard. Also, and if we're talking about haggling,
he's like, hey, you know that I'm the guy that gave these losers everything before they lost all the time, and I created this loser culture. But you should trust me when I say, bring me back, and I'll change all the losing.
We get to play the results on that one, but yeah. Who wouldn't have banked
that's
on...
That's what we do in this. That's
I know,
life.
But who wouldn't... I think more than a few of us would have pulled the plug a little bit earlier than now, but who wouldn't have initially signed up for those four dudes? Anyways, no, and if we're back to haggling over dollars and cents between him and MLSE, like, there's no cap, obviously, on executive salaries, and we're also not talking in the realm of, like, double-digit millions of dollars, right? Like, what? So he wants... $5 million, they're offering him $3 million? Like, really? Like, that is...
I don't know.
That is what we're having this all about? Like, that's why I buy the... That's part of the reason I buy the family thing, too.
No, I don't think it's that whatsoever. All I think it is it's about power within the organization. It's probably about term. And, of course, it's going to be about money. But that's probably the thing that they would change the most. The thing is, though, you got to think, man, that MLSE just let Nick Nurse go. That's some money that they had to pay out. They're still paying Babcock, right? Like Babcock, they gave all that money to $5 million a year. They still are a business. Probably doesn't feel like they have to know that the Dubas firing would be on the table with another embarrassing exit in a year later, and that they could be paying out all that money. I don't think it's about what he earns per season. I think it's probably about the potential of what he could earn overall on a deal that could ultimately end up being 1 year. They're in a tricky spot with it. They basically should – the best thing for everybody would be if he's a lame duck GM again, because he had his best season as a lame duck. I like how this started with, I'm like, the dumbest thing you can do is have a lame duck GM. But now I'm like –
that's the best thing.
Well, it's the best thing for this scenario, but they built themselves this poo castle that they're like, have to keep stacking poo on top. Like, they don't know what else to do. They don't know what else to do. It's just faulty. You know when there's like a building that has faulty wiring and they've got like the electrician that only knows how to he's like, oh, I'll go in here and I got to connect these two things to make this work. That's what this is. That's what they've got going for them. He's the only electrician that knows how to not burn the house down.
I'm just trying to envision what the conversation was at the conclusion of last year and what to do with Kyle Dubas and his contract. And it was a, hey, Like, he's done, I guess, you know, you can argue that he's done a good job, but we need to see results. Can we hand this guy an extension at this point? We got to see, you know, let's see him win a round. Like, was it literally as explicit as that? Like, and we just know so little about who's even making that decision, right? At the very top of the pile with the way MLSE is structured. And then this potential extension that was offered to him during the season, it's just like the workflow on this is just super head scratching, and just what the goals were, how they envisioned this going, that there was going to be some clean divorce. Like, the Leafs lose in the first round again to Tampa, that they don't have to pay Kyle Dubas because he's out of term and it's like a firing, and then they can start from scratch with an executive again. Like, that, even that scene, with still the same questions existing around Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, and the time frame, like, you would have had to get, like, those would have still existed if there was more hell to pay for this organization. Like, if they had gone out again in the first round, like, say they had gotten swept by the Lightning, those questions still existed, and you needed a new GM at that point too.
Yeah. And it doesn't look like they had an internal option that they were just immediately ready to turn to in Pridham.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, for whatever reason, it just doesn't seem as though he appears to be, I don't know, maybe an insider knows better and that he actually is.
But I thought he was, the Flames were inquiring.
No, he is, but what I'm saying is that the fact that the Flames are inquiring, and it could end up being like the Avalanche inquired about Dubas and he ends up becoming the guy. But I haven't heard anybody say that, well, if Dubas is gone, then they'll promote Pridham. I haven't heard that one yet, other than from media guys who go, isn't this dude one of the most important guys in all of hockey because he essentially helped write the salary cap and he's the guy that's helped them dance around every single, you know, cap manipulation that they've had over these last couple of years? Anyways, I'm very curious to see how it plays out, but it's incredible that after another embarrassing playoff exit, despite the first round win, there really seems to be a plausible scenario where just everybody is back except for maybe Sheldon Keefe, as though that would, you know, the least impactful guy returning is just so beyond strange. Anyways, it's time for Best Bets, brought to you by Betano Sportsbook, the 2022 Global Sports Betting Operator of the Year. Again, my favorite book, the only one I ever use. Reach out if you want to check it out. Been getting a lot of great testimonials from people lately because, I told you, like, I'm for the people, and this book is absolutely that. Tons of offers. So, again, hit yesterday. So we're riding the perfect week. I've said all along I'm not afraid to talk about it because I just think when you're me and you're the best, I don't know, sports bettor on planet Earth, you don't really fear saying it to people. Like, you just go in head first and you just keep winning. Austin Reaves, I had earlier this week to hit over 1.5 threes. I thought about running that back because it's still sitting there at 1.5. The problem is it's minus 154, and so it's a little bit too much juice for that. I like throwing that in the same game parlay. I probably will. But I'm going to go with Jokic's assists. I like Nikolai Jokic over 9.5 assists in this game. He's been just pumping out the triple-doubles to the point where the book now has him. Ben, you want to guess what a Jokic triple-double is in terms of the line?
I was going to say even odds, but it must be minus money.
It is. It's minus 110.
Holy cow.
Minus 110 for a triple-double in a playoff game against LeBron James. So the reason why I think that he's going to rack up the assist tonight is, well, one, he's just, you know, the best passer on planet Earth. But the second thing is just what the Lakers seem to try to do to Jokic in the fourth quarter of that game and why they were able to get back into it is they pushed him away from the basket with Rui Hachimura. And, they weren't letting him post up and catch it as deep and not in his same comfortable spots. I think Jokic will have an adjustment to that, but I think it's going to come with some dimes. And so, I just like Jokic to early on start to pick apart the Lakers and force them to adjust rather than the other way around. That is your best bet, brought to you by Betano Sportsbook. The game starts now. You got any picks for, like, you got any lean towards tonight's basketball game? I kind of think Denver's going to smoke them.
Really? I mean, they were smoking them for three quarters of game one, and then, Jokic couldn't score until, like, the final 2 minutes. And you do wonder if those defensive adjustments that you talked about with, like, Anthony Davis just hanging around by the basket, whether that's, like, something sustainable. I think the Lakers take this game. I think they were encouraged enough by that second half after being so discouraged. Like they were down, what were they down 20 points at halftime, or at least parts of, like, I think they were down by as many as 20. And
oh, the game was over. It was 19 at half, I think. You're right. Yeah. I'm not going to bet against Denver at home where they've been so unstoppable. And to me, what is really cool about this matchup is that you've got these two brilliant offensive minds who now got, well, just brilliant basketball minds with LeBron and Jokic, who get to go back and make those adjustments. And it's basically like a great quarterback battle where you get to see the second half in game two already. Anyway, we got to run. Please subscribe to the podcast. Leave 5 stars. Hit me up anytime at JD Bunkus, at Sportsnet Ben. Thanks for coming on today, buddy. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
I'm on a